Our special guest today is Jim Hurst. Jim has been a guitar player with many great bands, by himself, with Claire Lynch, with Missy Raines, a whole lot others that I can't even go list all. Probably there's so many different bands that Jim has appeared with. He has a brand new album, the Jim Hurst Trio, a trio he's very happy with, a very talented musicians, and you have to be to stay with Jim. You're going to hear the first part of our visit with Jim Hurst. He talks about the new album and those musicians and why they're together and why he's happy as he ever was, in his words. I'm really happy to welcome back to Unreal Bluegrass, one of my all-time favorite people, happens to be one of the best guitar players I've ever seen. Jim Hurst, how you doing?
I'm great now hearing that, and thank you. That's really a big compliment. Thank you, Steve.
I do. I'm doing good, man. I enjoy your playing, and I enjoy your personality comes through your playing so much because you have so much fun in the music that you're playing, and now you've put out this new Jim Hurst Trio collection, which just to me exudes all that same excitement and fun that you have playing music, and it's really, really fun to listen to, and I'm so glad that you did it.
Well, thank you. I had a lot of fun getting together with these two guys and collaborating and coming up with, this set of tunes that's on the CD. And I'm just having fun playing music, you know, as a whole. You know what I mean?
You always are. You always are. You know, I will tell you this. I knew that this album was coming several months ago. Nate Lee was traveling with Irene Kelly, and they contacted me to do. I borrowed a radio station across the river from where I sit, and we did a live broadcast. And Nate was there with her, and I had met him one briefly. But they came earlier than they were going to. Long story to say this, he says, "Oh, I got time to go back over and get back home to Nashville, and I go over to Jim Hurst's house." And I said, "What are you talking about?" Because I'm doing this album with Jim, and I thought, man, I got it. As soon as it hit, I had to get my hands there, because I knew what was coming.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Nate's such a good guy, man.
He's a good musician, plays a little bit of everything. On this album, I guess, is he mostly what? I know he plays mandolin. What else will he play on this album?
He plays fiddle and mandolin, and he also sings harmony.
Okay.
Nick does.
And then you have a bass player, Eric. Say the last name for me again.
Alvar.
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 Okay. And is
Eric
that
with a K? Erik. Alvar. Yeah.
And so that's the trio. That's the Jim Hurst Trio.
It is.
Right.
Yes.
So if we see you down in let's say Raleigh at IBMA Week, you're going to be there with the trio. It would be those guys more likely, right?
It will be those guys.
Okay.
Yeah, unless one of them gets hurt or something, yes.
Well,
I mean, that's the permanent. The three of us are the co-founding members of the Jim Hurst Trio. So as long as I can keep these guys working with me, that's going to be it right there. And I'm happy about that.
This album, which is I guess it's available. Well, let's talk about that at the front part, because we were talking about this just a minute ago off the air. It's available through your website. Am I right on that for now? I mean, people can go find it. You can buy it hard copies, and you
right.
can also download it. And your website's easy enough. It's just if they just Google Jim Hurst, they're going to find you.
Yeah, and it's jimhurst.com, and they can go to the merchandise store, CD, whatever. We have a new website which is not up yet for different technical reasons. One of them being I'm not a website developer, but the young guy that I got helping me with this is. He's working on it, so it should be up soon. But the web address for that is jimhurst3.com.
Okay.
And so eventually, probably by the end of the month, it should be up and running, and people can buy it there. It's also on iTunes, and you can probably buy it pretty soon on CD Baby. So if anybody comes to my website or to the Jim Hurst 3 website eventually, you'll be able to buy it in different ways. You can buy it with a credit card. You can do it through iTunes. You can also... I have a form that I've actually created that if somebody wants to send me a check, they don't want to do credit cards, they can download that form, fill it out, order whatever CDs they want, send me the check, and I'll mail it back.
Okay. Makes it easy. I count 11 songs, 11 tunes on this, right?
Correct.
Okay. And you cover, there's a little bit of swing, there's a tune in here that Keep Me Awake, and I'll jump right, kind of right to the middle. That could be Django Reinhardt and Stephan Kripalu. I mean, modern, updated, southernized version. But there's that kind of swing. There's some funky music. There's some bluegrassy stuff, and there's a waltz. I mean, you really you really used this trio, which I think has prodigious talent, to its best use, and you've just kind of stretched out and done all kinds of different tunes. Let's talk about the first one, which I'm going to let you pronounce again, even though you just did off the air. You tell me the name of the first tune on the album.
Modaliousness.
Okay. And you're laughing, so what? Where did the title come from?
Well, you know, musicians, at least, you know, some I've been hanging around with, and, you know, especially these young guys and girls that come out of Berkeley or whatever, there's several layers of understanding of music, and I have just enough understanding of music to be dangerous. And some of these young people, like Eric, the bass player, and also Nate Lee, the fiddle player, mantle player, they both know a lot more about the structure and the theory of music than I do. I go by my ears and my heart and what I've heard other people do that I have tried to change it enough to make it sound like me, but yeah, I don't know anything about real theory. I know enough about scales to help people who are trying to figure that out, show them some things. And I know enough about it to use it to whatever, you know, degree that I need it for. But modal, the word modal is one of those terms, and one of those, I think it's probably applies in different ways in music form. Of course, if you're talking about serious music, you know, if it's classical or if it's serious jazz or, you know, some sort of composition, then, you know, serious high-level composition, I think modal probably takes on a little bit more of a higher understanding to be able to figure out what it is. In the bluegrass world, in my playing style, and some of that is in the bluegrass world, modal means you're not playing a lot of what I call pretty notes the major third notes of a chord of a scale, which adds to the other two notes of a triad of a chord. That makes it a major chord or a minor chord. A modal, to my understanding now, a modal idea is meaning you're going to be playing more what I call mountain blues, and you're not going to be just stating the third note of the triad so that you don't make it major or minor. A lot of guitar players will play a G chord without allowing the B notes to be heard, and I call that a modal G. Some people call that G5, meaning you're only playing the root and the fifth,
okay,
and there's no B notes in the key of G. So modal is a term in bluegrass, I think, that calls it's the quickest way to tell folks that we're playing like a bluesy, a mountain blues version of a bluegrass tune.
Well, and that's important because so much of the mountain bluegrassy sound is blues. I mean, in one way or the other, it's been, however it got there, it was an unhappy, you know, musical journey as far as the blues influence, I think, on a lot of it. That's what people connect with in that mountain sound, I think, not necessarily in a modal form,
so.
But there's kind of a bluesy sound there.
Yeah, I think so, too. And some of that comes from, like, you know, gospel music, church music.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things that, you know, old-time music, some of the old things that my grandpa used to play, like Man of Constant Sorrow and Little Birdie and all the things that my grandfather used to play and my dad used to play, they had that kind of dissonance, if you will,
that's the word,
sound to what they're playing. Even the banjos have a different kind of tuning on some of that stuff. And even some of the fiddles are cross-tuned and mandolins are cross-tuned. And, you know, there's a lot of Stanley Brothers tunes that have that kind of sound. And I just love that. I'm drawn to that like a moth to a flame, but I'm not the Stanley Brothers or Bill Monroe or whoever you're about. I just can't make that work for me because I'm of a different ilk, but I love that sound. And so as a playful kind of a way to title the new composition that I came up with, which is track number one, Modaliousness, I thought, well, it's a throwback to that kind of idea. While it's kind of an up-tempo bluegrass kind of a song for guitar and other music too, other musicians and other instruments too. Nate does a fine job, as does Eric on this song. But it's kind of a cute kind of a. I came up with the title because I think I'm cute at this age. That's the quote from the song comment. You know, well, at my age, you know, there's so many great musicians that's been out in the acoustic world and bluegrass music for sure. I think trying to find a way to be yourself while being cute and, you know, being interesting, that's part of the challenge, I think. So the title, I mean, no one really gets it. Even the guys in the band were saying, how do you pronounce that?
Well,
so
good.
I feel like I've come up with a new word.
You have. And every time we talk about it, I make you say it because I still can't remember. But all right, now we're there again. We're back to that point. It's a nice instrumental, and it's got a nice tempo to it. And I think it's a good way to kick off the album to introduce what the Jim Hurst Trio is going to unveil throughout the rest of the recording. I may be putting too much into that, but I think it's a nice place to start.
Yeah, I think it's great. And the other thing about that, Steve, is I was, you know, as you record an album, one of the considerations is sequence. You know, which song goes first, which one goes last, which is the one that probably is a center. Well, Nate had the idea, since it's the Jim Hurst Trio, he said, I think Modaliousness should go first because you started off and then Eric and I joined you, which is kind of what that, you did the solo thing, you just have to do the trio and you had us come in to join you.
Yep.
So it really, in a kind of a semantic kind of way, really kind of launches the CD too. So I think it's a good starting point.
I think it's a great way to introduce everybody to what's going to happen. Then you get right into, musicians do this a lot, and the more and more that I talk to them, especially the ones who are on the road, there's going to be songs that are either directly reflective of that life on the road and balancing it with home life or not. But certain there's discussion somewhere, maybe not in the title of the song, but in some lyric there's going to be something about being on the road. And the second cut on the album, I'm on my way back home to you, is clearly that. I mean, you're just talking about I'm enjoying my music. This is my dream. I can't wait to get home, but still this is my dream job. You know, you keep waiting to wake up from the dream job. So, I mean, that's a nice balance, and I think you'd probably do that well. You're a road musician, you're a traveling musician, and on this song you really put it all together, that this is my music life, but I have my life, and they're all connected, and I never will forget it.
Exactly. And, you know, it's a chosen profession, as we all know. We're not doing it to get rich, because if that was the case, everybody would do it, because everybody wants to play music, and if they can make a lot of money, that'll be out there. So there's a certain amount of sweat equity, probably more than anything else, that goes into being a professional road musician. And so, you know, it's really great to get out there and have these dates and do all the things that we do, radio visits and, you know, workshops and, you know, clinics at music stores, maybe doing something for schools or retirement homes or whatever. Of course, you know, festivals and performing arts centers and all that. But in the end result, we're gone from home for however long that is each week or every month or whatever. And so it's all wonderful. But, you know, the times together with the family, and in this case, I'm talking about all of my family, not only my wife, but, you know, I have two adult children. Actually, my daughter just got married this past Friday, and my son has been married and got two grandchildren from him and his wife, and so we're fairly new grandparents. And then my wife and I have been married 38 years, so getting away from family to go do this is a challenge. It's a real challenge. It was harder when I was a full-time on-the-road truck driver. But at least I get to, and I love driving a truck, and I respect that way of life, because it's not easy as well. But at least I get to do what I most genuinely love, that's not, you know, my God or my family, it's playing music. And so the people have afforded me the opportunity to do this. But yet, getting back home is the next chore, and I can't wait to get there. So that's Jack Shannon, a friend of mine who wrote Same Old Moon off of my Looking Glass CD. Yeah. He also wrote Pick the Wild with Flower off of Looking Glass. And he helped me I had it pretty much roped in, but he helped me to finish that song. So I think it says a lot.
And that has a nice bluegrassy, a slower tempo bluegrassy feel to it, in my way of thinking.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
The third tune, I'll tell you what that is. Daisies for Judy is a love song without any words.
That's exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to write a song for my wife for as far as back as I can remember, and I've never been able to, you know, to do something that really matters to her and matters to me until I came up with this melody. And it's just, once I heard it, I knew it right then that was what it was going to be about. And that's funny about songwriting for me, Steve, is that, you know, songwriting can take on like a process. You can sit down with a storyline. You can sit down with a bunch of ideas for verses and choruses and bridges. And how many times do you say this? And what's the hook line? This, that, and the other. But some of my writing, and I think some of my best writing, comes at just inspiration. it falls through the trees, it comes through the window, it hits me while I'm driving, whatever. And that's where most of these songs on this CD come from, especially Daisies for Judy.
Oh, it's beautiful.
That's her favorite flower. If you know, daisies is her favorite flower. She had it on her bridal bouquet when we got married. Her dog is named Daisy.
Oh.
She loves Daisy. And I think it matches her personality because it's a delicate, wonderful flower, but it's also not so delicate that it doesn't survive a lot of things. And she's been with me all these years, and just surviving that is a pretty big deal, you know, because I'm a crazy musician. But, and so I think the melody really speaks a lot to her, the depth of personality that she has, that she doesn't necessarily reveal to everyone. And I think the melody is so gentle, and the way that Eric and Nate played this song was just top shelf.
Jim, you,
honored to be.
You would not have to title this, and I would know what you were playing about. And I say that I'm not bragging, but you would not have to have titled this. I know you, I know Judy, I know the relationship, because we speak about it when you and I talk. And you would not have to say this is Daisy. You could have called it song number three, and I would have told you the same thing. It's a love song without any words, and I knew exactly what it was about.
Well, that's awesome, Steve. That's really that makes me feel good. You know, when you compose a song, when you make up one, as Roland White says, I made this one up, you know. When you do that, you hope that the intention translates somehow or another. And I feel like, if nothing else, it's a genteel, pretty melody.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully it matters to people, even if they don't know the story.
Yeah, I think they'll get it. I think they'll get it right away. We spoke a little bit about Keep Me Awake, which I do put in that kind of, I don't, gypsy jazz is a word for it, but I of your skill and the way that you can play, I know that you also bounce into some swing modes every once in a while. That to me is almost like, I mean, it could be a modern Django and Stefan Grappelli playing something, in my way of thinking. And you can explain that, help me explain that a little bit.
Well, you know, his music, you know, Django, you know, the Hot Club of France is one of the many things that's influenced me as a musician. You know, Bob Wills and, you know, Texas swing, you know, Texas blues, bluegrass, country swing, rock, pop, all that stuff. I mean, you know, Jeff Beck and, I mean, there's some Andre Segovia. You know, all these people have influenced me. But one of my favorite type of music is also David Grossman and dog music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hearing Mark O'Connor or Tony Rice or Daryl Anger, Mike Marshall play those songs with David Grossman is another one of my big, you know, favorite influences and musical joys to listen to. And this song, you know, was an extension of my musical desires, and I guess maybe too far of an extension for my abilities, but I have fun messing with these things, and I felt like the performance on this song was good enough to include on the CD, especially by Eric and Nate. And you know, the song Keep Me Awake, the title probably tells you pretty much what it is, but I was on my way back home from some solo performances in New York, and it was late at night when I started headed home. I didn't want to spend much money in hotel rooms because I didn't make a whole lot of money on the gigs that I was out there. And so it was rainy, it was summery, you know, June. I think it was May or June. And I'm headed back home, and it was hot enough that when the rain fell, you know, the wipers had to be on. And it was hot enough that when the rain hit the pavement, it was hot enough that it just, you know, that kind of ground fog, my dad used to call it, rain just kind of evaporated, and all that steam was coming up off the road. The road lines weren't painted that well. It was hard for me to see. I was tired. I was getting sleepy. And I thought, I need something to kind of stir me on for a while because I got to drive a big while. And so with those wipers going, you know, the timing of the wipers, a lot of the things that I feel musically in on the road are noises from the highway, noises from the car, noises from the rattling. And so it's a lot of that where, you know, the sound of the wipers and, you know, certain melodic ideas came to me. And I'm doing my mouth trumpet, you know, and I'm doing, you know, things on the wheel and coming up with all these different ways. And almost to verbatim, the song that we recorded is what I recorded on my iPhone voice recorder. And I just sang the song through. And that's pretty much what we recorded.
That right?
And that's pretty cool. But it did keep me awake. It kept me awake for a couple hours.
That works. Yeah. That works. I didn't mean to skip over. I was going to come back to My Own True Darling. A little bit of a banjo sneaks in there, just a little bit.
Yeah. A little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah. That's a song that a friend of mine who lives in Frankfort, Kentucky, Bob Gregory, and I wrote. He sent me his ideas, and he actually had most of the song kind of written, and I threw a couple ideas at him, and we did a version of it, and he loved it. So he kind of insisted that I be co-writer on it, even though I felt like it was his tune. But anyway, yeah, I'm playing banjo, and I don't do clawhammer. I wish, you know, in some ways that I could. But when you hear really good clawhammer players like Lynn Morris and Mark Shatt, somebody that do that clawhammer thing so well.
I like Walt
Lynn
Kocan.
Lynn Morris is one of my favorite players.
Oh, I love Lynn Morris. Oh, Walt Kocan, I think, just and Reed Martin. Well, we won't get into this area, but
yeah. But you know, it's got that certain sound. It's got that kind of a loopy kind of a sound.
Right.
And so, in order to do my version of that, without having to sit down and learn it, I'm a little lazy sometimes. But I take the picks off and I play it three finger style. But I try to do it with that loping kind of finger pattern on the right hand.
Makes sense.
And so that's kind of what it is. And it's actually a banjo. What we used to record this with is a banjo that Nate Gadd made. He's a luthier. He's a banjo luthier. And he made that banjo, and we recorded it on this album. Nate's playing fiddle, and Eric drops the bass and picks up the mandolin for this cut. There's no guitar or bass on here. It's Nate on fiddle, Eric on mandolin, and me on banjo and then vocal.
I like it. I like it. The Sitting on Top of the World. Can you imagine a song that's been recorded in more different, we'll say, fancy word genres of music, in more different styles? Sitting on Top of the World is one of those things that really fits, and you take it and make it into kind of a blues intro, and then, of course, everybody knows it as bluegrass. It's a blues tune also, but you kind of make this one your own. I think I really like what you've done with Sitting on Top of the World.
Thank you, Steve. That chord pattern, where the chorus goes to the four chord, in the case of this, it's in G. So we instead of going to the five chord, the D, we go to the four chord, which is the C. That's the way my dad used to do it. Now, that's a real old song. Mm-hmm. And I looked up songwriter credits. I looked up whoever wrote this and who's the publisher. And I looked for 3 days trying to find out, you know, who actually wrote this song and where does the royalties go and all that, because I wanted to, that's what I do, is, you know, I pay royalties the best I can. And so everybody and their brothers recorded a version of this and they have it copyrighted. Well, I'm not going to do another copyrighted version. I'm just going to call it an arrangement, and then those who actually have the copyright can call me up and say, hey, you owe us money. I'll send them their $91 and I'll be done. But it's like, Ray Charles did a version. Doc Watson did a
version.
There's so many people that did versions.
Eric Clapton.
Yeah, and they all, I don't know about Eric, but all these others, the Mississippi Sheiks is the first I could find, but there's some old guy, I think he was actually one of the original members of Mississippi Sheiks, that did it on his own, but all these versions had different copyrights. Well, I'm not going to pay copyright to somebody that thinks their version deserves a copyright. I just don't feel like that's fair to the original, you know, owner.
Right.
I don't know what happened with all that. But anyway, I love what you guys did. That was the first song. This interesting part about this song is, first of all, I like fun. And I think the song is fun. I don't care who does it.
Right.
You know, Doc Watson or Ray Charles or whoever. Jerry Reed did a funny version of it.
Mm-hmm.
But Eric Albar, when Nate and I were looking for a bass player, Nate said, I only know one guy, and he named Eric's name. And so we got him to come over and just play with us. We didn't tell him he was auditioning or anything, because we didn't know if he was auditioning or not. So we just thought we'd play with him and see how it fit. That was the first song we played, was Sitting on Top of the World, and it was a version real similar to this. And they both just slayed. So I thought, okay, well, right after we got done with this song, I said, man, are you interested in joining the band? And he agreed. So that's where we started with the Jim Hurst Trio, really. And this song, Sitting on Top of the World, was the catalyst.
Really?
I think, or at least part of the catalyst.
I really like it. Let me skip over the machine and get to Funky Flatfoot, because that's, you've done this, not this song, but this is not something that's unfamiliar to you, and I'll tell a listener, by the way, we're talking to Jim Hurst about Jim Hurst Trio. This is a guitar and bass, essentially, right?
Well, it's all three of us, but yeah, I mean, mostly it's driven by the bass line.
Right.
I've written a few songs that the bass line really is the reason for the melodic idea.
And yes, it is. Everybody's there, but I think clearly the bass line is really, well, let's put it this way. This could be the bass player solo if you're doing it live, if you wanted to just take a break on it. But, I mean, you in the past, I've seen you do this with Missy, not this song, but, I mean, this type of a setup, obviously. If it was you and Missy playing, you know, and you guys would always stretch out when you were doing things on your own. So I felt like this tune was a nice way of making that sound again of Jim on guitar, and everybody was in it on this particular cut, and also Eric on the bass. I just really enjoyed this one a lot because of that feel that it brought me back to.
Well, thanks, Steve. I enjoy playing with Missy, and I do enjoy whenever we get a chance. And, you know, this song actually was written for Mark Schatz. I composed this song thinking of Mark Schatz's bass playing and his dance, his step dancing,
mm-hmm.
and his, and, you know, tambourine. Everything that he does, his Paul Hammer banjo, has so much rhythm and so much feel and so much heart and soul. And I think his bass playing is probably, if I had to pick one of his many talents, it would be probably bass first, his songwriting composition second, his clawhammer
banjo
third.
Yeah.
And I just love the way he feels when he plays. Actually, there was a song on Box of Chocolates that he played with me.
Hmm.
And that was written on bass line too. And, that, you know, I enjoyed that song so well. It was one of those songs that, you know, I played it on an acoustic and fretted bass, you know, one of those guitar basses, and sent it to Mark and asked him if he would play it with me, and he agreed that he would do it. And so when he played it on upright bass, it was pretty much what I asked him to do, what I had already recorded. And so that was a lot of fun. But this one here is in tribute to Mark.
Okay.
And it's also in tribute, really, to Eric, because Eric's the bass player on here.
Right.
The song was created for Mark and in tribute to Mark and his all his wonderful talent.
And I didn't mean to ignore Eric's playing at all. Just to me, when I hear you with a bass player, kind of like, you know, I think of those other recordings. And Eric is phenomenal on this whole album. And this he absolutely drives the bass line, which I think is the center of this particular piece of music, and wonderful playing. I didn't mean to allude that he should have been somebody else. I mean, it made me think of you and Missy seeing you perform. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do, and I appreciate that. And, you know, it is a showcase for Eric when we do it live. You know, we did it live at the Long Island Bluegrass Festival, and it's basically a bass solo piece with support.
Yeah.
And that's fine with me.
Absolutely.
I'm good with that, you know.